Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar, pitch inning for John Wilkerson. Pleased now to be joined by Dr. Jerry Punch with ESPN. This appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Doc, I'm wearing some New Balance. I bet you are too.
Absolutely, guys. Good to be with you. I know I don't go anywhere without my New Balances. I get a lot of people in the airport or see me. They say, you do wear these things all the time. I say, I wear them because I like to work out in them. I like to travel in them. They're comfortable. They're good for my feet. More importantly, they're good for my back. I used to have, low back pain when I would sit in airplane seats a long time or walk carrying bags. And now, and I asked the folks at New Balance, I said, how can a shoe, I'm a medical doctor, how can a shoe make that big a difference? They said, oh, it does. They're wide, they're stable, they're comfortable, especially if they're fit perfectly, which is exactly what the folks at New Balance of Knoxville will do if you go by. And Sharon and all her great staff, David and everyone there, will do a wonderful job of fitting you perfectly over 75 different models. And it's for all ages. So we're thrilled that they are a sponsor of our show. And I absolutely believe in the product 100%.
Doc, we've got Brad Keselowski gets the win at New Hampshire. He has now had at least three wins 5 years in a row. Talk about his win and talk about his consistency.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's showing this year. I was around when Brad started out with Penske back in 2010, and he just was on fire. Won a Cup Series title. He won a back then was a Busch Series title, a Nationwide title, and a Cup Series title. And he grew up from being around his mom and his dad racing. Mom and dad at the racetrack every weekend, understanding that it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And so yesterday was a prime example. He has been on fire this year, third win of the year. Remember, Penske shuffled the crew chiefs up. And now Brad Keselowski, on top of getting his third win of the year, has his seventh consecutive top five finish in the last seven races. He's had two wins, and the rest of them are at least top five. So he's done an incredible job just being very, very very, very consistent. And he drove his guts out yesterday. He and Denny Hamlin went back and forth. Typically, the New Hampshire track, the Magic Mile, isn't known for really great battles side by side. But yesterday was the exception to the rule because there were over 20 lead changes. He and Denny Hamlin put on a great battle. He and Ryan Blaney were there. And, of course, in the final segment, Keselowski pulls away to win it by almost a couple of seconds. But a great afternoon for racing. I tell you what, I'm not sure if I was NASCAR, I'd change anything because the racing has been really good. Kudos to Goodyear for putting out a tire that gives up, and so the racing is good. The new downforce package they've got, the 750 horsepower engine package they've got, is really good. It's allowed a lot of passing. But Keselowski, and we've been talking every week, Jimmy, about him and Vince about Keselowski being the wild card, being the number one free agent in NASCAR. Maybe would he go to the 48 car? Maybe would he go here or go there? Because he had not been offered and had not signed to return with Penske. That changed an hour ago. He has now been offered and accepted an extension to stay with Penske Racing, so he'll be in that 2 car for next year. And they didn't say how long the terms were for, but this goes to show you what out-driving people and just spanking the field like he did yesterday can do for your contract.
Well, and we had talked for a lot of this year about this is the Hamlin Harvick show, but you got to add Brad Keselowski to that list, don't you?
You really do. I mean, Hamlin's got 5 wins, Harvick has 4, and now Keselowski has 3. And Kevin Harvick didn't have a great day yesterday by Kevin Harvick standards. He ended up finishing 5th, but as it goes to show you, when you can have an off day, I mean, Harvick had won 2 in a row up there in New Hampshire. He's really good on flat racetracks. When you can have, quote, a bad day and finish 5th, they decided to stay out, and they made a call to stay out. Crew chief took full responsibility. The call could have gone either way, quite honestly. I don't think the crew chief needs to blame himself. But Harvick has to make an extra stop, come from the back of the pack, take the wave around, and ends up getting back to 5th place. So not a bad day for him. Not typically what he's seen up there. But Hamlin, Harvick, Keselowski, those guys, I mean, any of those three, those are the three hot teams right now. And then on the other end of the spectrum, poor Kyle Busch You know, I don't think I've ever said poor Kyle Busch, because Kyle's normally winning or finishing second, or, you know, it's been 13 months. In the last 13 months, we put it this way. In the last 13 months, Kyle Busch has one Cup Series win. And that was the finale last year at Homestead. Of course, that you win when you have to, and that was the championship race. He won it and became the series champion for the second time. Otherwise, he struggled finding victory lane, which is unheard of given the kind of talent he's got.
So why do you think that is with Kyle Busch? Is there anything you would pin that on?
I don't know. Boy, I'm sure everybody's got different ideas. No one can pin it down. You got a talented team. You got Denny Hamlin, his teammate. That's one of the best cars, you know, every week in and out as a factor to win. Kyle there's either a mistake on the, you know, in the pits. There's a Kyle bounces it off the wall like he did last week at Kansas. He scrapes the side of the car. Mistakes. I mean, uncharacteristic mistakes by very talented teams. You have those years where, you know, you've seen NFL teams, Major League Baseball teams, those have all the same talent that wins a World Series the year before, and the next year they're overthrowing, you know, simple ground balls to first base, and they're, you know, striking out and making, you know, just doing things that silly things they wouldn't do. And for whatever reason, now Kyle's still should be comfortably, you know, unless something drastic happens, in position to make the playoffs. But, you know, he hasn't won a race, and, you know, that could change. But boy, you know, that's, you know, it's got to be just so frustrating for him, as competitive as he is, not to be able to get there, especially when your teammates are right there knocking on the door every week or winning like Denny Hamlin is.
Doc, I was going to ask you about the contract extension for Keselowski. You mentioned that he would have been the top free agent out there. Who would be now next in line now that Brad has this new deal?
Well, no one knows what Kyle Larson's going to do. Does he come back? You know, he's been quietly going about his mending his ways and trying to show people that, you know, Kyle Larson's, you know, I think his mom is Japanese, so she's, you know, he's obviously, he came up through the diversity program, so he should be, of all people, he should understand diversity. He's been doing a lot of things away from NASCAR, not beating his chest saying, look at me here, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, but quietly doing those kind of things. I think he's certainly earning his way back. So does he come back and get in a car? You know, the question was, is Jimmy Johnson not going to race full-time next year? Who are they going to put in the 48 car? We mentioned last week that they still have Ally on board for sponsorship. That car is fully sponsored next year. You know, do they bring, you know, Bowman from the 88 car over because that car doesn't have a full sponsorship next year? Do they condense or downsize from four teams to three at Hendrick Motorsports and put Alex Bowman in the 48 car? There's a discussion this week about Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace's stock has risen for lots of reasons, and, you know, there's some discussions. There's a lot of corporations out there that got a chance to see Bubba when at Talladega, with the show of support he got from his teammates, and now there's people jumping up saying, hey, you know, this kid needs a chance. He's driving for an underfunded team, even though it's owned by the legend Richard Petty. He's part owner, I should say, but they don't have a lot of funding. So now there are people who want to jump up and sponsor Bubba next year. If you've got sponsorship money to spend, you can pretty much name your own tune. The word is, you know, Ganassi may be interested in putting Bubba in the 42 car. You know, there's some discussion at Hendrick. The 43 team, Richard Petty's team, has offered Bubba an ownership stake, it's been reported. Now, I haven't seen him specifically say that's happened, but it's been reported that they've offered Bubba a chance to be a part owner of the 43 team if he will stay and bring sponsorship. So there's a couple of fast food chains. There's several other major companies that are interested in sponsoring Bubba. So now he enters the mix as a free agent. So and then there's the young drivers that are in the Xfinity Series. Chase Briscoe, who has been winning left and right, impressing people. He drives for Stewart Haas Racing. Does he go and take the 14 car away from Clint Bowyer? Does Bowyer stay put? Bowyer's a veteran, but he finished 18th yesterday. Likeable, fan favorite, outgoing, energetic, but he's not winning. And Briscoe is winning, and he's younger, and Does he take that ride? And then what happens to Clint Bowyer? Or does he retire and become a broadcaster? There's so many moving parts that are starting to really float to the top now over the last 7 days. And it's going to get even more interesting over between now and probably the end of August.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. Doc, the SEC made the announcement they're going 10 conference games only, and I wonder, with the later start, September the 26th, they're pushing it back about 3 weeks, SEC championship game being pushed back 2 weeks, does this make you more optimistic that we'll have a season, or do you still have perhaps a wait-and-see outlook on college football this fall?
Well, I'm optimistic. I've always been optimistic, Jimmy. I'm also realistic in that, you know, we have to make sure we do things the right way. We realize the coronavirus, so the way we control the coronavirus is limit spread, which is social distancing, masks, et cetera, all the things we were able to get our hands on, get our arms around back in April. With that said, I think Greg Sankey did a nice job. And the old saying is control the things you can control. And I think the conference-only schedule is a very nice compromise by him and the school presidents, the athletic directors, because you want to control. You pretty much say we can control what happens inside the SEC. We know our member institutions will do everything they can to keep our athletes and our officials and our coaches and our fans as safe as possible. But when you go outside the school to some of the non-conference opponents, especially the smaller schools that may not have the financial wherewithal to do a weekly test or to be able to separate their players when they travel with multiple extra rooms, et cetera, that could be a concern. So I get Greg Sankey's desire to want to limit it to conference play. So I'm very optimistic there that'll happen. The ACC obviously decided to go with an 11-game schedule, a 10-game conference schedule, adding Notre Dame in the mix for 10 conference games. So makes them eligible for a conference championship. And in one non-conference game, provided that one non-conference game be in-state so you don't travel, which allowed them to play the Georgia-Georgia Tech rivalry game and the Florida-Florida State rivalry game as a non-conference in Clemson, South Carolina. That preserved those rivalries, but they had to be in-state. So I can see how that works specifically for the ACC, whereas this conference-only schedule I think will work really well if we can continue to be able to get our arms around what's happening with the surge in the coronavirus and be able to get a later start. I think the later start is helpful, and I think the conference-only schedule is helpful in terms of us being able to get college football up and running.
Let's go to the phones where Kevin is our first caller for Dr. Punch. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, guys. Hey. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Punch, I have a question for you.
Okay.
You know, if you go, I'm one of the fans that NASCAR has lost this year. One of the many. I'm heavily involved in dirt track racing, the shock side of it. And, you know, you go to youth sports, youth football, youth baseball, that's the lifeblood of college and NFL. How do you think NASCAR is going to be able to survive? I go to dirt tracks, and the racers, the fans, they're all turned off. They're not tuned into NASCAR anymore. NASCAR has cut the roots off of the tree. And how do they think that sport's going to survive when they've turned their back on their base? When they've just, and I'm saying this because I know I'm out there every week. I don't know one thing. Hey, we're going to watch the Cup race this week. Nobody cares anymore. Nobody's going. How are they going to survive? How do you think they're going to survive?
Well, I think that's been a situation that's been ongoing for like the last 2 years with NASCAR. For me, I see the racing with what they were forced to do this year being better than it's been with no qualifying and no practice. I thought there's so many young drivers in the mix in the truck series and the Xfinity series that the routes were pretty fertile. I don't know about the relationship with some of the short trucks. Why do you think recently they've turned their backs? I thought just the opposite. I thought Jim France coming on board and his leadership, he's a short track guy and an entry level, track guy, at heart. He grew up there. I thought of all people, he would try to make sure they embrace the short tracks for NASCAR.
Well, and not like the rebel flag. Not, I'm not racist. I'm not for slavery and everything because the flag doesn't stand. What I would challenge you is go to some dirt tracks, and you'll find out the distaste and discord. I mean, nobody's going to NASCAR races anymore. I haven't been going for years anyways, but I'm telling you, Doc, they have. We're not talking about the NASCAR series of truck and midget. I'm talking about the grassroots. Everyday American that's out going to dirt tracks is turned off by NASCAR. Their stance on the way, the political stance they've took, the things they've done, they have turned off the average fan. And when these tracks open back up and COVID's gone, they think attendance was low years ago. Just wait and see. Because we used to go to dirt tracks. I've been going my whole life on Friday and Saturday night. We talked about the Cup race coming up on Sunday. Nobody cares now. I from one to the other, nobody cares. And if you were out there seeing it, you would be alarmed by it as well. From the stand,
yeah.
I'm telling you, it's real.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. I've heard that. And I don't know what the answer is. I certainly have heard this, that I have received personal phone calls from a number of former NASCAR owners and fans, who have had the same sentiments. And my only hope is that, Jim France's leadership and, the people there, they can somehow, over the period of time change that. I don't know. I mean, I'm like you. When I would go to a short track race, and I haven't been recently, but when I would go to Hickory Speedway or Asheboro, or one of the tracks that I would go to, Volusia County Speedway in Florida, which is the big dirt track down Barberville there right now from where I live. People, all they could talk about was what was going to happen on Sunday at the Cup race. But that passion is not there, and I'm not really sure specifically why or what. If it's the political stances NASCAR has made, the statements they've made, or I'm not sure exactly. But in my opinion, this is my opinion, I think the racing on the track, the Cup Series races, in the last 6 or 8 weeks have been better than they've been in years. I think they're really, we've never seen that many lead changes at New Hampshire. It was incredible. It's in New Hampshire, one of the most boring tracks to go to, and yet they were mixing it up in the rule package and the tires and everything that they went for. It was really, really, the announcers were hoarse before the race was halfway done because there were so many lead changes. I'm hoping that maybe the product itself will bring some fans back. I don't know.
That's Doc Punch. If you want to ask a question, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. When we come back, we'll have more with him. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Ranger. The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. We do need to cover this. Vince, I want to ask you, there's been some scuttlebutt about Eve Pons, the rising senior at Tennessee in basketball. He has until midnight tonight to declare whether he's going to stay in the NBA draft or return to Tennessee. What are you hearing?
Well, there is a tweet sent out by ESPN college basketball analyst Sean Farnham, who I really like. I think he is exceptional at his job. He tweeted out that Eve Pons was returning to Tennessee. Big news. This he'll be one of the best defenders in the country, and it will make Tennessee a top 10 team in the country. Moments after that, he deleted that tweet, and then he sent out another tweet which said, just got a call on Eve Pons. Was told by a source that he was 100% to return to Tennessee. Now being told he is having second thoughts, but still leaning to return to Rocky Top. Stay tuned, dot, dot, dot. So people ran with the first tweet. Now people are sharing the second tweet. And it's bizarre. I would be surprised, guys, if Eve Pons was indecisive like that this late in the process, but who knows. So anyway, that's the latest, and he was the only one to put that out there other than other people repackaging Sean Farnham's tweet and claiming as their own, which is part of our news cycle today.
Yeah. So, Doc, what do you think? Do you think Pons should return? Should he stay in the NBA draft? How do you see it?
Well, I mean, selfishly, I hope he returns. I think he's a fabulous defender, great player. Love watching his energy. I love watching his up and down the floor. The hustle factor, I think that's infectious on the team, although I think most of his teammates are equally motivated. But from a standpoint, I realize the NBA is the ultimate goal. Like, people wanting to get to the upper level, want to get to the NFL or get to the Cup Series in NASCAR. But in a year where there's so much uncertainty and so much confusion and people playing in bubbles, of all seasons, maybe to stay put and just the old pig in the poke, you know what you got at Tennessee. You got a great coach who cares about your players and you care about each other. You can't get that year back. It's like family. You know, of all times, maybe to stay put and say, I want to be a part of this. This is special. I can't get this back. In the NBA, who knows what's going to happen there, the rules. The bubble situation, who's playing where, what's happening there, with the uncertainty there in the league, I'd stay put. I'm not paying his bills, but I think that financially he's probably okay from what I understand. But, selfishly, I'd like to see him stay. I think he, this year could be an incredible, contributor, and not that he wasn't last year for Tennessee and Coach Barnes.
Yeah, and I had said that I think he should return to Tennessee and that he needs to improve his offensive game. And I mentioned he needs to take his scoring average from about 10 to 15 or 16. Mark Pankratz corrected that. He said he does need to improve his offensive game, but it's going to be hard to average that many with such a well-rounded team. So I'll concur. I'll agree with that. But he does need to improve his scoring average. He needs to improve his ball handling, and he needs to improve his shooting on the move. Those are things that I think he could do at Tennessee to ensure he would be a first-round draft pick. Otherwise, I had an NBA scout that told me he's more likely to not be drafted than to be a first-round pick. So that was that's the latest on Eve Pons. Let's go to the phones where Jim is our next caller. Jim, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
Hey, Jim. Yeah.
Hello, Dr. Punch. I'll be satisfied if Eve Pons comes back and just gets 12 a game.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I'll take that. If Dr. Punch wanted to, I don't want much. I wanted to ask you about the situation in the Pac-12 of the group of players with their list of demands threatening opt-out or boycott or whatever word you want to use if those demands are not met. What do you think of that situation, and where do you think this goes?
I'm not sure. I saw that. I started out with some players, in Oregon, and after what I've seen take place in Portland the last 3 months, I'm not sure if I understand what's in the water out there, what's happening. I think everybody, the schools themselves, realize they want to do what's right in terms of social equality and social justice. I'm not sure players standing up and trying to force a conference's hand or an individual or school's hands is the way to get things done. I'm not too sure what the message is you're sending, except for the fact that you're putting yourself in a position of us versus them, and I'm not sure there's enough of the us to make a difference from what I saw in the numbers that have signed on. I haven't read specifically what they want, other than they want certain demands made in terms of social inequities. And I don't mean this to be ugly, but it is the Pac-12 and it is the West Coast. It's California and Oregon. And who knows, if you've ever been out there and watched the news at night, you know, is there anybody on the news that isn't complaining about not getting something? I get confused on who wants what and who's, it's remember when it was, how long ago did Jimmy did Tennessee play at California in Berkeley, and there were people sitting in trees out there walking in the stadium. And I'm not trying to be ugly, but they're just different and out there, I get that you want certain things, but I'm not sure that's the way to get it, to say we're not going to play unless we get this and this. If I'm the conference commissioner, I say, well, we're going to miss you. We're really going to miss you.
That's interesting you say that, because, their demands, they're not just on health concern demands, which are certainly expected, reasonable, and so forth, but they do go into social demands, but they also go into economic demands, which
right.
you're not going to flip a switch and make those kind of changes. And I just wonder, I think colleges have said, look, we're going to honor scholarships if a kid has a genuine concern about his health, especially depending on whether or not there's even other people on campus, whether there's whether school's in session on campus. But when it gets to this point where there are demands being made of whether we're going to play or not play, then I wonder, are these scholarships really going to be honored if we're getting into a demand kind of situation,
I agree. I think you can't. I don't think this is the way it goes. Trying to hold these schools hostage and say, I understand some of the social issues that they want addressed. I get that. But even going back to Northwestern's, when the players said we want to try to figure out why can't we unionize, and all that went through the legal system there in terms of the NCAA, they had some legitimate gripes and grievances that were heard. But this situation is completely different. And I agree. You start trying to hold these schools hostage because you want economic rewards, then maybe, I don't know. I'm sort of a hardball. I probably wouldn't be a good athletic director. And you got to love people like Philip Fulmer and others that can handle these kind of things and smile in both directions. I probably couldn't do that. I'd probably say, we're really going to miss you. Go ahead and go to the NFL draft or the NBA Development League, because we're going to do what we can for the students who want an education and want a scholarship that we're providing for them, in spite of the fact that we may or may not play. We're going to honor that scholarship and give you an education, and you're not going to hold a knife to us or going to try to leverage us or blackmail us into getting money for whatever reason that others aren't getting. So it isn't going to work that way. I just think you got to be, they're trying to bully the schools, and I don't know how it's not just not the social issue, it's the financial issue that I have a problem with.
Yeah, yep. Well, Jimmy said it earlier. He said the Pac-10 commissioner's making over $5 million a year. Let's start having him earn it.
Absolutely. I'm not sure he could, but now's a good chance he can start.
He's cut his pay to $470,000. That's
okay.
All. Yeah. So I don't know how he's going to live on that.
Yeah. But, well, guys, good to talk to you. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Jim. And by the way, my understanding is the Pac-12 and the SEC, maybe others have done this too, but those two conferences have said if players opt out for COVID-19 reasons, then they will honor their scholarship. I don't know about a threatened boycott, and I don't know. I'm going to guess the Big Ten has probably done that. I don't know about the ACC or the Big 12. They may have, but I don't know that. All right, let's go to Doug. Doug, you're on with Doc Punch.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
Hey, Doug. Hey, I was calling about something else, but evidently they don't teach finance in California. You go in and make your demands when your company or your employer or your school is making the most money. You don't go in when they're facing bankruptcy like this now.
Yeah. They must have missed that day in class. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to ask particularly Dr. Punch, if any of y'all watched the St. Jude Classic yesterday, They put Bryson DeChambeau's swing in slow motion.
Yeah.
And it was 18,000 frames per second. How in the world do they make a camera like that?
Yeah, I don't know how to evaluate that. I heard that. I felt sorry for the golf ball, right? When you see the compression on the golf ball, it's like, oh, my gosh. I'm nicer. Let me just say this. I'm nicer to a golf ball than he is.
yeah, he said, Nick Serafado said, if I was that golf ball, I'd probably take two Aleves or Tylenols, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but anyway, I wanted to ask Doc Punch, speaking of technology, what is, and I'm sure a lot of technology plans have been put aside after the first part of this year, what is the highest or the sharpest HD TV now that is commercially available for something like the Super Bowl? Is it 4 or 8? 16?
Oh, my gosh. It depends on, I know it's beyond four. I think there's, you know, and it depends on different, I'm not a TV expert, although mine are 4K. There are, and I did buy the 3D ones when they were coming out because ESPN told me they were going to have 3D because I was going to be doing some 3D games, and I still have a 3D television, but there's no 3D exist anymore. So I guess to show you how much I know about it. Everyone calls it something different. There are some that call it, there's a 6K version. The problem is that not everything, not a lot of programming, only a few live sports and a few movies on streaming services are actually streamed or produced live in 4K. So, that's the thing, that's what they don't tell you, that a lot of normal programming is not 4K or above, in high definition. That's why when you go to buy these televisions, they run a streaming or a movie that is in that kind of high definition. I can't tell you what the latest and greatest is right now. I know it's above 4K, but most people that I know of that I talk to, other announcers I've talked to, if you get 4K, you're in good shape.
Okay, great. Well, Doc, I bet you'd look good in 4K 3D. You'd really be handsome, wouldn't you?
Yeah, as long as you got a wide screen, I'm in good shape, yeah.
See you guys. Thanks.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Doug. And when we come back, we've got Doc Punch for one more segment. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk, 99.1 D, Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle. This is 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville.
Doc, back to NASCAR. How do you think the sport overall has handled the pandemic and the return to the sport when it's so dependent on sponsorships and that money has got to be difficult to come by?
Great question, Vince. Here's the interesting part is when the pandemic and the quarantine and everything associated with limiting sports and activities and groups to getting together to practice, the one sport that seems to have found a way, because it was uniquely positioned to compete without crowds and without social and with social distancing, was NASCAR. Getting back to Darlington with no fans there, specific rules, the entire world was watching because it was the first major league sport to come back and do a live event. The drivers drove in, stayed in their car, their motorhome, walked right to their car, their race car, and got in themselves and put their belts on, carried their own helmet, carried their own water bottle, didn't have all the people working for them to be around them. Interviews were done with a microphone on a 6-foot pole. They did a great job. And what happened, what we found out, is that the pandemic forced NASCAR's hand and made them do some things they probably would not have ordinarily done for years, meaning shorten some races, run double headers, think outside the box, run a weeknight, a Wednesday night primetime show on national television. And what's happened, those things have been win-wins. They've been slam dunks. The ratings have been good. We're getting fans back, the response from fans online, the response from sponsors you mentioned who are struggling financially. Some are struggling financially right now, but the sponsors that are able to be able to function have said, this is really cool. Why didn't we think of this a long time ago? And it's all as a result of what the pandemic made NASCAR do. And there are people, I think, and Jimmy, you may want to chime in on this as well, who believe that the pandemic forcing conferences like the SEC to play 10 conference games, you know, because and that could be a win-win down the road, because you play conference games, that's going to be attendance, that's going to be more interest, more television ratings, maybe more sponsorship involvement down the road. Maybe that's going to, you're going to realize, hey, this, in a world in which, you know, that's driven by the economics, this could be a win-win for us. I know we'll probably have limited fan attendance this year, and everyone's working as hard as they can, developing the different models as the week goes on as to how many fans they can get in. But in years when you can't allow all the fans back, the 10 conference game schedule or the 10 plus one or whatever may be the way to go. And it all started by being forced from the pandemic.
I would like to see a 10-game SEC schedule with two non-conference games down the road. I don't think the league will do it. I think they feel like they would cannibalize themselves and have too many losses and jeopardize the possibility of getting into the college football playoff. So while I would favor 10 plus 2, I don't think they'll do it. Vince, do you?
If it was in conjunction perhaps with an expanded playoff, but that seems unlikely in the next couple of years until they run through that contract. So I could see it with an expanded playoff to where you could overcome an extra loss or perhaps even two. But before that, with just four teams, I don't see them doing that. Doc, to that point a little bit, with all these conferences deciding on what to do with their format, how involved do you think the networks, especially ESPN, ABC, have been in communicating with them about the inventory of games that they'd like to have?
I think given the money that's involved and what's at stake in terms of desperately needing live sports programming and conferences – needing the revenue, and it's in, they're sort of in this together. They're a team, the SEC Network, the SEC ESPN, the same way with the ACC Network, and the long-term contract that moves ahead beyond CBS for the SEC. I think they're heavily involved, Vince, and I think that, you know, being able to have the 10 conference games and fans not being able to go maybe as much this year. And I've got to believe, just like NASCAR, we're going to see viewership skyrocket. We're going to see people watching these marquee games. There may be fewer on, I believe. But, you know, I think people are going to be watching these marquee games. The ACC, they've got to love that, being able to get Notre Dame to come to all these different locations and play, you know, five games away in conference away from home. The five they'll play at home will be on their network. Now, they'll play Duke and Clemson, Florida State, Syracuse, and Louisville at home on NBC, and then the NBC revenue will be shared within the conference among the conference participants, which has not happened in the past. So it's a win-win for the ACC and the television networks, combining NBC, ESPN, and ABC there. I think the same way with the SEC. So I think, you know, in what I was saying, I understand the SEC probably wouldn't want to go to a 10-game conference schedule, because when you got a conference that's sort of the heavyweight champion of college football in terms of every year getting a chance to get at least one, if not two, in the conference in the Final Four, the championship playoff, and I could see how you would not want to overburden your teams with conference play when you could play non-conference games a little bit easier in between the heavyweight games you have to play. But I think television's heavily involved in some of this decision-making in terms of the schedule.
Last thing for me, Doc. And on the subject of college football returning, you mentioned you're optimistic that we'll be able to play. And I wonder if maybe you feel more of a level of confidence in the technology that the schools are going to be using, the resources that they might have, like the Whoop technology, the contact tracing that Tennessee is using. Also, LSU put out these shields for the helmets that they're going to have in play, and I'm sure there are other things as well. Maybe frequency of testing far beyond the minimum. How much confidence does that give you? Do you anticipate that maybe those things will be executed at a greater level to try to keep everybody safe, more so than maybe what the public image might be?
I think those schools understand. I think the coaches, and maybe even more importantly, the athletic directors at the Philip Fulmer kind of level, they have made their staffs, aware, probably, over aware of what has to happen if we have a chance to play the game. And that has to go campus-wide. It has to be to the chancellor and the president, because you can't have students come in and suddenly you have a surge on campus because of parties and groups and collections of fraternities and sororities and dormitories, et cetera. And then you shut school down a month in, and suddenly then what happens to college football? It's got to be transmitted. That kind of discipline has to be transmitted across the board for the students who do come back and are in class. I think to try to eliminate that. As I mentioned, I talked to an administrator at one of the college's major universities in Mississippi, and his prediction was we'll be back in school 1 month and then we'll be shut down again because we'll have a surge here. I hope he's wrong. I hope that doesn't happen. But as far as football is concerned, I know some medical staffs at other SEC schools, and they are working diligently with them with shields and gloves and hand washing, not only to protect the players, but to protect the coaching staff. You got 40, 50, 60-year-old coaches and beyond. You got officials that are in their 40s and 50s on the sidelines. You got a lot of other people that are support staff that must be in place for a college football game to occur. So you have to, it's your responsibility as an athletic trainer, as a certified athletic trainer and a medical staff on these football teams, to not only protect the players, but to go beyond that for the staff that's on the sidelines. And so I think they're working really diligently for that to happen. It's a yeoman effort, and I think giving the time to start the SEC schedule to the middle of September or beyond is wise. I think, again, another point to applaud what Greg Sankey has done leadership-wise, to give people time to get ready.
Doc, what's this week hold for you?
Well, we're sort of waiting to hear what's going to happen with college football, and every time the phone rings, it's a different solution or a different question or a different what if. So I don't think anybody knows who's on first at the old, Abbott and Costello, or what's on second. But I was in Memphis over the weekend where they had the golf tournament there. In the rain, I've traveled a little bit. I'm going to be in Charlotte this week for some meetings with some of the folks at NASCAR. So a lot of interesting. I'm going to be doing a lot of listening the next few days, and I will. And what I hear, I will be happy to pass along next Monday.
All right, Doc, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Doc.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
And that is Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville.